and welcome to Iris for Sunday, January 17th, 2021. My name is Trevor, and I'll bring you the Sioux City Journal today. For today's, let's look at the forecast. We're looking at intervals of clouds and sunshine today with a northwest wind of about 10 to 20 miles per hour, looking at a high of 34 degrees. Tonight, it'll be mostly cloudy with winds from about 4 to 8 miles per hour, so calming down, but a low of 23 degrees. Monday, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, it'll be cloudy with a couple of flurries, high of 35, low of 23. Tuesday, there'll be low clouds, high of 37, low of 22. Wednesday, it'll be mostly sunny, high of 44, low of 27. And then on Thursday, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 39 degrees and a low of 18 degrees. Looking to the front page of today's paper, we will now read the mini editorial at the bottom. This comes courtesy of Kim Simmons of Sergeant Bluff, and Kim writes, quote, "I can never reference my adult children as anything less than fathers and mothers trying their best to instill integrity and love into their children. May God help them. Amen." Signed, Kim Simmons of Sergeant Bluff. All right, let's now look at the front page spread. The story is regarding the Missouri River flooding of 2019. There's a picture of an excavator digging out rocks and dirt from along the banks of the Missouri. Headline, flood repairs on schedule. Subheadline, two ongoing projects will wrap up repairs caused by 2019 flooding from South Sioux City. After it flooded back-to-back years, the Missouri River spared South Sioux City's scenic park in 2020. River levels were even a little lower than usual, a welcome development compared with the nervous bank watching and subsequent cleanups after the river overflowed into the popular camping site in 2018 and 2019. As the calendar flipped to 2021, the city continued to repair more than $1.2 million in damage done by flooding in 2019. Accepting bids for two projects totaling nearly $620,000 that will restore two sections of riverbank along the South Sioux City riverfront and fix 11 stormwater outfalls damaged by high river waters. The city has also decided not to undertake an ambitious flood wall project aimed at protecting the park from future flooding. Obtaining necessary U.S. Army Corps of Engineers studies and permits delayed the riverfront repairs, which began recently. There's a lot of hoops to jump through, and it just takes some time to get all those things in line, said Gene Maffitt, South Sioux City Parks and Recreation Director. Work began a little more than a week ago on a $247,696 project to fix city stormwater outfalls up and down the river. Maffitt said it's suspected that pipes were broken, shifted, or disconnected. Contractors won't know the extent of the damage until they begin excavating each one. Quote, until we get into those, we really don't know the damage to them, he said. Repairs at Scenic Park were done in the wake of flooding and in 2020. More than 40 electric pedestals at Scenic Park campsites were replaced last summer, work that wasn't included in the current repair projects. A $372,148 contract will fix damage to the riverfront and park. The replacement of a damaged section of recreational trail has been completed and sand deposits were leveled, covered, and seeded. Maffitt said recent work focused on replacing two sections of Scenic Park riverbank totaling 350 feet that were washed away during the flooding. Both areas have been rebuilt with soil, and workers next will install rock riprap to protect the repaired sections, which will be covered with dirt and seeded. Other work includes rebuilding the bank at the boat ramp basin and dredging sediment deposited there during the flooding. Quote, it was hard to get boats in the river at the boat ramps last year, Maffitt said. The two latest flood repair projects will have a minimal impact on the city's budget, Deputy Treasurer Josiah Boneshan said. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, will pay 75% of the costs. The Nebraska Emergency Management Agency and city will each pay 12.5%, leaving the city's share at $77,480. Boneshans said the city plans for federal and state budget authority that are used as contingencies each year. The budging authority is used only if the city incurs an expense such as flooding. Quote, we would typically pay for the damages up front out of reserves and then replace the expense with reimbursements from FEMA and NEMA, or the Nebraska Emergency Management Agency, Boneshkan said. FEMA and NEMA reimburses municipalities for their shares after the work is finished and has been inspected. The two ongoing projects will wrap up repairs caused by 2019 flooding. Boneshkan said six smaller flood repair projects initiated in 2020 are mostly completed. The city received $56,094 in FEMA reimbursements for flood repairs in fiscal year 2020. Construction projects will not include a flood wall that the city had begun contemplating in 2019 when it notified NEMA of an interest in building a 3,500-foot-long earthen berm that would have extended roughly from the Norm Waite YMCA past the Devil Soccer Complex. Meffitt said it would have been hard to gain federal approval for the project, and FEMA voiced concerns that a flood wall would push flooding downstream. The project also would have carried a big price tag. Quote, I think that is not feasible, Meffitt said. We did pursue it, but it didn't go very far. So that's the update from the 2019 Missouri River flooding and the damage it did in South Sioux. Next story we will look to is the presidential inauguration set for the 20th. That would be this Wednesday. Headlines: skipping the inauguration. Subheadlines: some local Democrats cancel travel plans after insurrection, from Sioux City. 4 days after the November 3rd election, when enough states had released voting results that finally showed Democratic nominee Joe Biden had won the presidency, Trayla Lee excitedly booked a flight for January to witness Wednesday's inauguration activities in Washington, D.C. But the shadow of the novel coronavirus pandemic and the January 6th chaotic civil unrest at the Capitol, where a mob overpowered police and stormed the building, temporarily shut down the Electoral College confirmation process, made Lee reconsider. She knows the inauguration activities are greatly scaled down this year due to security and health concerns, but nonetheless wanted to be in the vicinity of it all. Quote, it is extremely disappointing. I have to do what's best for my safety, Lee said. Woodbury County Democratic Party Chairman Jeremy Dumkrieger said some other local residents wanted to be present for the inauguration, but made a different choice because of the national circumstances in early 2021. He doesn't know of anyone in the metro area who is still planning to be there. Quote, people have told me they would have gone if not for COVID-19. One friend had planned to attend but canceled due to the insurrection at the Capitol last week, Dumkrieger said. Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris will take the oath of office from the Capitol's West Front at 11 a.m. Wednesday Central Time. Missing the culmination of Biden's electoral victory over President Donald Trump is a bitter pill to swallow for Biden supporters like Lee. In January 2009, Lee was seated 50 yards away from the stage where Barack Obama took the oath of office for his first term. She described the experience as a political highlight of her life. Plus, she got to take it in with some of her siblings. A few weeks ago, Lee and some of her friends, including some sorority sisters from college, had lined up housing for this week's inauguration. Between the pandemic and the looming threat of more violence at the Capitol, Mayor Muriel Bowser of D.C. is asking people not to come to the District of Columbia for the inauguration. And at Bowser's request, the National Special Security Event Declaration was moved up to January 13th, a distinction which she said puts in place an entirely different command and control structure for security. On Wednesday, Airbnb announced it was canceling all reservations in the Washington metro area. The FBI has warned that armed protests by violent Trump supporters were being planned in all 50 state capitals, as well as in Washington, for the days leading up to the inauguration. More than 20,000 National Guardsmen have been deployed to provide additional security for Inauguration Day. The Iowa National Guard is sending 250 members. The 185th Air Refueling Ring, based in Sioux City, is among the units sending personnel. So that's from our front page. Let's now turn to A2, the local state section. Looking to, for one, the Iowa Republican Party and what their kind of take on the future is. Headline, despite Trump loss, state victories have Iowa GOP at, quote, peak, from the Journal Des Moines Bureau. It'll be up to the rank and file to determine if Iowa Republicans are moving on from Donald Trump, GOP Chairman Jeff Kaufman said Saturday. Quote, you know, that's going to be ultimately for the citizens to decide, said Kaufman, who was unanimously reelected by the Republican Party of Iowa State Central Committee. I believe with the lengths of the coattails that he added in the state and what I'm hearing from our phones and emails and from texts, and I mean, we are bombarded here, and I mean literally bombarded. Yes, I think he still has a great deal of support in this state. Kaufman and former Iowa House Speaker Linda Upmeyer of Clear Lake, who was unanimously elected as the party's co-chair, didn't mention the president by name in their remarks. They were focused on the GOP's wins in congressional and legislative races and efforts to maintain Iowa's first-in-the-nation caucus status in 2024. I can't think of a time when things have been stronger. We are at an absolute peak right now, Kaufman said. Here in Iowa in 2020 and 2016, we painted Iowa red and delivered the state solidly and pretty overwhelmingly for the Republican nominee for president and the incumbent president and had a successful 2020 caucus. Republicans also maintained a 32-18 advantage in the Iowa Senate and, quote, did something that I don't think anybody expected by increasing their House majority to 59-41. The GOP also reelected U.S. Senator Joni Ernst, picked up House seats in the 1st and 2nd districts, and held the 4th. Quote, we are not going to rest, Kaufman said. He wants to see 34 Iowa senators and 60 House members and carry all 6 federal seats in 2022. That's when Governor Kim Reynolds will be up for reelection. The state Senate, the Senate seat held by Senator Chuck Grassley, will be on the ballot. Grassley has not said whether that he will seek reelection or not. However, Kaufman said that with the Senate tied, any race will get national attention and the money that follows. In response to questions, Kaufman said, the state party's focus is on state races. Quote, this was never Trump's Republican Party, Kaufman said. This was Kim Reynolds' Republican Party. At the state level, if you have a governor, the governor of that party is the head of that party. That's Kim Reynolds. At the same time, the chairman said, quote, I can't think of anything more important, I literally mean anything more important, than Iowa retaining its first-in-the-nation caucuses. He doesn't know what impact the selection of Jamie Harrison of South Carolina as Democratic National Committee chairman will have on Iowa's leadoff position. Like Iowa, South Carolina is one of the 4 carve-out states that begin the presidential nomination process. He's building a coalition with Republicans from South Carolina, New Hampshire, and Nevada. After the Iowa Democratic Party was unable to report definitive results for the February 2020 caucuses, the national party leaders called for changes, abandoning the caucus system or moving Iowa later in the nomination process. If that happens, Kaufman said it will be harder for Iowa Republicans to maintain its first-in-the-nation status. Quote, it's a moving target, he said. Regardless of what the Democrats do, quote, I would do everything humanly possible to preserve it in the Republican Party, but it would be much, much more difficult to do it, end quote. All right, next headline has us again looking to Des Moines. Headline, person tests positive after visiting Iowa Capitol. 5 days into the Iowa legislative session, lawmakers and staff have been alerted that someone, quote, associated with the House has tested positive for COVID-19. Chief Clerk of the House, Megan Nelson, sent a message to lawmakers and staff shortly after 6 p.m. Friday, alerting them that someone who had been in the Capitol on Wednesday tested positive earlier in the day. The person, who in accordance with House and Senate protocols was not identified, reported wearing a face covering in the building, Nelson said. Face coverings are not required in the Capitol. Leaders in the GOP-controlled House and Senate said they cannot enforce a mask mandate, but have said they, quote, strongly urge people to wear masks while at the Capitol. On Monday, the opening day of the session, hundreds of people opposed to wearing masks rallied in the Capitol. The lack of a mask mandate creates divisions even before the session started. In the House, Democrats have asked that people attending committee meetings in person be required to wear masks. Those protocols have been defeated largely on a party-line vote. Democrats have also criticized Republicans for not delaying the 2021 session until more Iowans receive COVID-19 vaccinations. According to Nelson, appropriate cleaning measures will be taken at the Capitol this weekend. Contact tracing will be completed by the appropriate public health agency. Lawmakers will not be in session Monday due to the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Next, let's turn to the brief stories. Headline, one dead, two injured in I-29 crash near Elk Point Friday evening from Elk Point, South Dakota. One man died and a man and a woman were injured in a crash on Interstate 29 near Elk Point Friday evening. The crash took place at 6:20 p.m. Friday in the northbound lanes of I-29, roughly 2 miles south of Elk Point, according to a press release from the South Dakota Department of Safety. A 2014 Ford F-150 pickup was southbound when the driver lost control due to the icy road conditions. The vehicle went across the median and into the northbound lanes on the other side, where it collided head-on with a northbound 2016 GMC Yukon. The driver of the pickup, a 57-year-old man who has not been identified, was partly ejected and was pronounced dead at the scene. A 58-year-old female passenger suffered serious, non-life-threatening injuries and was taken by ambulance to a hospital in Vermilion, South Dakota. The driver of the Yukon, a 49-year-old man, sustained life-threatening injuries. He was transported to a hospital in Sioux City. All three individuals were wearing seatbelts. The northbound section of Interstate 29 near the crash was closed to traffic for about 3 hours. Traffic was rerouted through the Jefferson, South Dakota exit and on-ramp. The South Dakota Highway Patrol is investigating the crash and all information is still considered preliminary. And next regional news is related to COVID-19. Headline, more COVID deaths reported in Siouxland from Orange City, Iowa. The COVID-19 death toll in Sioux County jumped Saturday, with an additional 5 deaths attributed to the virus. Cherokee County, meanwhile, added 2 and Plymouth County added 1. Sioux County's death toll now stands at 56, while Cherokee is now at 27 deaths and Plymouth County is at 68, according to Iowa Department of Public Health data. Collectively, the death toll across 14 northwest Iowa counties, that being Woodbury, Monona, Plymouth, Sioux, Lyon, Osceola, O'Brien, Cherokee, Ida, Crawford, Dickinson, Clay, Buena Vista, and Sac, stands at 578 as of Saturday. COVID-19 is considered the underlying cause of death in roughly 91.7% of these individuals, while the other 8.3% had other health conditions that contributed to their demise. The daily tally of new infections in Woodbury County has continued to slide, with 50 or fewer new infections recorded each day since January 8th, according to the Siouxland District Health Department. The tally of new infections was as low as 22 on Tuesday, and the two-week positivity rate has declined to 13.7%, while the one-week positivity rate is as low as 9%, according to Iowa Department of Public Health data. The number of long-term care outbreaks suffering COVID-19 outbreaks or long-term care facilities in northwest Iowa has been relatively stable this last week. As of Saturday, 14 facilities in the region were suffering outbreaks, compared to 13 a week ago and 18 a week before that. Across the state, the number of facilities suffering outbreaks has declined this month, down 78 on Saturday, compared to 90 a week ago and 104 a week before that. Statewide, 1,759 of the Iowa's 4,321 deaths were residents of long-term care facilities. This proportion has declined somewhat as the state's overall death toll has climbed. In August, more than half the state's total deaths were associated with long-term care facility outbreaks. All right, let's now turn to page A4 for the state and nation section. Headline, Iowa GOP addresses Trump's election claims. Again from Des Moines. Republican President Donald Trump's term in office officially ends Wednesday, exactly 2 weeks after he sparked a siege on the U.S. Capitol that was motivated by his attempt, joined by his most zealous supporters, to overturn the country's presidential election results. Quote, we're going to walk down to the Capitol and we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women. We're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them because you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength and you have to be strong. Trump said during a rally in Washington, D.C., just hours before hundreds of his supporters stormed the Capitol. The attacks left 5 people dead, including a U.S. Capitol police officer. Because those tragic events were fueled by Trump's repeated and baseless claims of widespread election fraud and his repeated calls for his supporters to take action, there has been a renewed focus on whether Republican leaders went along with or pushed back at Trump's unfounded assertions. Years of nonpartisan research has showed that widespread election fraud does not exist in the U.S. State elections officials, including many Republicans, provided assurance that this year's elections were conducted fairly, and Trump and his allies had more than 60 court challenges to the election results rejected or thrown out. On Friday, a federal prosecutor in Pennsylvania closed an investigation into 9 discarded ballots the president had touted as proof of election rigging, saying the office found, quote, insufficient evidence to prove criminal intent on the part of the person who discarded the ballots. Iowa's Republican congressional and statewide leaders have addressed the topic to varying degrees in recent weeks. To get them all on record before Trump leaves office and Biden is sworn in, the Bureau surveyed Iowa's top Republican officials, U.S. Senators Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst, U.S. Representatives Ashley Hinson, Martinelle Miller Meeks, and Randy Feenstra, and Governor Kim Reynolds, and the state party chairman Jeff Kaufman. The Bureau asked each Iowa Republican for an emailed response to the same 3 questions, covering whether they acknowledge Biden as the next president, whether they believe the elections were free and fair, and whether they regret not doing more to push back at Trump's baseless claims about election fraud. All 7 Iowa Republican leaders surveyed acknowledged Biden as the next president. However, critics will contend that such an acknowledgement should have come weeks sooner, closer to when the race was called for Biden, just a few days after the November 3rd election. Many Republicans, including many of Iowa's GOP leaders, said Trump or any other candidate should be allowed to pursue legal challenges to the election results. Those Republicans waited until after that lengthy process played out, until the certification of the Electoral College votes on January 6th, to acknowledge Biden as the president-elect. During the 2-plus months in the meantime, Trump continued to make public and unfounded declarations of election fraud, all while those claims were repeatedly knocked down in the courts. Quote, as I said in the weeks and days leading up to the Electoral College certification vote, I owed it to my constituents to consider all the facts and allow the various court cases to play out, said Feenstra, the congressman from Western Iowa's 4th District. Quote, President Trump was well within his rights to explore and challenge any irregularities or illegalities, utilizing the legal processes that are afforded to every presidential candidate. Although there were countless claims of election fraud across the country, not a single state sent a different slate of electors to change the outcome of the election, even though they have the constitutional power to do so. Grassley said it was better to allow the process to play out rather than have an elected official attempt to provide assurances of the validity of the election results. Dismissing challenges without allowing the review process to play out would have only exacerbated concerns about the fairness of this election. It would have deprived campaigns of their rights to seek independent review and would have left too many questions unanswered, Grassley said. After several recounts, re-canvasses, and more than 70 legal challenges, voters can be confident that Joe Biden won this election fair and square. To ignore this fact is to ignore the many safeguards and independent quality control measures by states and courts across the country. Ernst said while there is some fraud, quote, in nearly every election, she said she has not been presented with or seen sufficient evidence of fraud that would alter the outcome of the presidential election. A spokesperson for her office pointed to comments she made in a radio interview about one of the Trump team's more dubious claims that some election candidates, quote, paid to rig the elections for themselves. In her response to the Bureau, Ernst noted that she also supports efforts to ferret out any illegal votes and learn from any irregularities during this election, and that she supports a Senate Republican proposal to establish a bipartisan commission to study the integrity and administration of the election. No Iowa Republican surveyed expressed regret for supporting Trump's re-election bid in the aftermath of the U.S. Capitol attacks. Most condemned the attacks, but many also heralded what they considered accomplishments achieved during Trump's term. Quote, I was proud to join an overwhelming majority of Iowans in casting my vote for President Trump in November due to his record of delivering results over the past 4 years, including historic tax cuts, slashing burdensome regulations, and delivering free and fair trade deals for our farmers. Senator Ernst said, Ernst, quote, Iowans soundly supported and voted for President Trump this November, as they did 4 years ago. We have accomplished a lot of really important things that directly benefit Iowans' lives. However, January 6th was a display of very poor leadership on the part of President Trump. To say I'm disappointed is an understatement. I'm furious. From the president down to every individual, we need to tone down the rhetoric and treat everyone and our institutions with dignity and respect, said Miller Meeks. Quote, every individual, whether a candidate for office or not, is personally responsible for their own comments and conduct. I supported President Trump based on his policies and results for the American people and our country's setting, such as cutting taxes and decreasing business regulations. Prior to COVID, those policies created an unparalleled economic boon with expansive job growth and wage increases. Kaufman, who was a staunch and vocal supporter of Trump throughout his term and re-election campaign, drew a line between supporting Trump and supporting the January 6th attacks on the U.S. Capitol. Quote, President Trump delivered on his policy promises he made to Iowans, things like negotiating free and fair trade deals like the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, cutting taxes and rolling back burdensome regulations, and bringing peace deals throughout the world, Kaufman said. 74 million Americans supported President Trump's re-election. Having supported President Trump does not mean you support what happened at our nation's capital last week. Grassley also listed new trade agreements, tax cuts, criminal justice reform, biofuels policy, and the confirmation of federal judges as the reasons he does not regret supporting Trump's re-election bid. Quote, my job is to help improve the lives and livelihoods of Iowans. It's about policy, not personality, Grassley said. These are just a few of the accomplishments from the last 4 years that occurred with the help of the Trump administration. I share the view of the other 897,671 Iowans who voted to build on these accomplishments by re-electing President Trump. Next headline, public debt in state expands to $17.9 billion. Subheadline, State Treasurer says low debt can contribute to slow growth. Des Moines. The outstanding debt for state and local governments topped $17.9 billion in the fiscal year that ended June, the State Treasurer reported on Friday. That's a 4.8% increase from the previous fiscal year, said Michael Fitzgerald said, though Iowa remains among the states with the lowest debt in the nation. Quote, usually for Iowa, you see 3% to 5% growth in the debt, he said. Iowa is a pay-as-you-go, low-debt state, and it's continuing to be that way, but local governments are making some investments. But low debt, he said, contributes to a slow-growth state, too. So which one do you want? If you're going to invest, now is the time to do it. This is a good time for public units to borrow money, given low interest rates, to, quote, pay for capital projects that benefit Iowans, such as public buildings, schools, and utility improvements, Fitzgerald said. Borrowing by local governments represented more than 60% of the total debt reported in fiscal 2020. Cities recorded the largest share of outstanding debt at $6.556 billion, which accounted for $36.6 billion of the debt reported and represented an increase of more than $259 million compared with fiscal 2019. Schools issued $4.45 billion in outstanding debt, while state authorities followed with $2.84 billion. Counties, state authorities, and community colleges had the highest percentage increase from fiscal 2019 levels, the state treasurer said, while state agencies, public universities, and utilities decreased their total outstanding debt. The state and regions paid down some of their debt, he said, most notably a 7.5% drop for the University of Iowa from $1.193 billion in fiscal 2019 to about $1.1 billion last fiscal year, a reduction of about $89.5 million. The University of Iowa was able to pay down its debt with proceeds from a 50-year, $1.17 billion deal it signed with ENGIE North America to manage the university's utility system. Quote, in this time of very low interest rates, cities and schools are investing for the future. Counties, too, if they have to build a new prison or new courthouse and stuff like that, Fitzgerald said. Quote, they're taking advantage of these low rates where the state and Board of Regents are not. Fitzgerald, the Democrat, said the refinancing of bonds for iJobs and Vision Iowa programs produced tremendous savings for the state while reaping the benefits of those initial investments. With Vision Iowa, he said the state borrowed $220 million and worked with counties and cities and local efforts and generated, by many estimates, over $3 billion in growth. So some of those really paid off, but the state's not doing any of that right now, and it might be something they want to think about. Iowa traditionally ranks between 45th and 48th place among U.S. states for the lowest amount of debt per person and continues to be, quote, a very, very low debt state, Fitzgerald said. The state government itself has been really super conservative, he said. All political subdivisions and state agencies are required to annually disclose outstanding long-term obligations to the state treasurer. Including those obligations are bonds, notes, capital leases, and loans. Iowans can review the debt in their counties and communities at iowatreasurer.gov. Click Outstanding Obligation Reports under the For Governments tab on the View the Report, and then click the Report Detail by County to view additional information. All right, let's now turn to the opinion section of today's paper and get letters to the editor from local Siouxland voices. First one, titled of the letter, is Recent Events Resembled, quote, the Kane Mutiny. And this, the letter writer writes, The recent events the last few days at the Capitol have moved me to reflect on the movie The Kane Mutiny. Donald Trump, that would be represented by Captain Queeg, has done his meltdown and is done, and rightly so. However, like the officers of the USS Kane, neither Republicans, Democrats, nor the media get to walk away with clean hands. Any or all of them could have taken steps to mitigate the circumstances by finding areas where we could make common cause and by being honest with the American people. The American public would have been much better served instead had we had for 4 years of not my president and, quote, part of the resistance. John Boehner at least offered to work with President Obama before Obama shut him down with, quote, elections have consequences. We need genuine public service and impartial investigative reporters. Instead, we got virtue signalers and social justice warriors who, given all the events since Election Day 2016, have had the credibility of Joe Isuzu. Signed, Jeffrey Levine of South Sioux City. Next headline, Trump was major source of disinformation. The letter writer writes, One thing notably missing from the journal's January 10th editorial was the word, quote, Trump. Along with many others, I firmly believe that his White House was the major source of disinformation for the past 4 years. He was the source of the big lie about a rigged election for weeks before and after the election. He repeated the same lies over and over until his followers believed them to be true. He had tons of enablers, including right-wing radio and TV personalities. Anyone who disagreed was, quote, fake news. Even U.S. Senators like Ted Cruz and Hawley should have been able to tell allegations from facts. There is no place for gossip on the Senate floor. Plus, I have not seen or read of any time that our Representative Feenstra mentioned Trump's name. Sad. There was no evidence proving that the vote was rigged. Trump's own appointee, Chris Krebs, confirmed the security of the election. When you mention a problem with voting, the journal opinion people also become enablers by giving tacit approval to those who would continue to, quote, stop the steal. Surely you must be aware that rioting and attempts to kidnap and or kill people in office are not behind us. The one person who could have a major effect on stopping the carnage that, quote, he alone could fix is the same person whose name you left out, Trump. In reality, I don't believe that will happen. He doesn't have the character or principles to care about anybody but himself. Signed, Arden Jasper of Sioux City. Next letter writer headline is Conspiracy Theorists Should Relax. They write, Conspiracy theorists relax. The Chi-Coms will not take over the world, our economy will not collapse, and once again the conservatives will be the adults in the room 4 years from now. Effectively, what gave Trump the White House is what took it away. His inability to communicate his accomplishments. What was accomplished in 4 years was breathtaking. Slashing the corporate tax code and creating exponential growth, reshaping the federal judiciary generationally, 4 million jobs created prior to COVID, and the lowest ever record unemployment in our African, Asian, and Hispanic communities. We are now independent of and an exporter of fossil fuels, and farmers received $28 billion to aid in 2018 and 2019. This cannot be overlooked. Unfortunately, the events in D.C. this month, whether QAnon-inspired or disenfranchised Trump loyalists, was unacceptable, and this cannot be overlooked as well. These individuals need to be swiftly brought to justice. Violent insurrection against our democracy is treasonous and should be looked at as domestic terrorism. So, where does that leave us? This is merely a regime change. It's what the vibrant democracy does. Politics ebb and flow because you get what you vote for. As for the Democrats, they will do what they are programmed to do. Tax, regulate, and the same boring, do-nothing brand of politics. Indeed, the progressives have the House, Senate, and executive office. However, their time is ticking. Tick, tick, tick. Signed, Raymond Thomas of Lawton, Iowa. Now let's look to the Journal editorial board. Headline, Biden lays out plan to tackle historic challenges. When President-elect Joe Biden takes office next week, he will face one of the most difficult presidencies in modern history. The coronavirus pandemic, a divided country, and the threat of violence at our nation's capital are more than any administration should have to inherit. Luckily, the incoming president has used his post-election time looking for solutions. Thursday, he proposed a $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan that would stimulate the economy, speed up the national vaccine program, and increase testing. While it's doubtful Congress will give him a blank check to make it happen, the proposal does show that he's ready to go to work and eager to address the country's most urgent needs. It includes key proponents to combat massive economic blow the country sustained during the pandemic. First bullet point, $1,400 checks for most Americans, which on top of the $600 provided in the most recent COVID-19 bill, would bring the total to $2,000. Next, $50 billion to expand testing and help schools and governments implement routine testing. Next, $20 billion for a national program that would establish a community vaccination centers and send mobile units to remote communities. Next, a temporary boost in unemployment benefits for Americans who have lost jobs as a result of COVID-19 related closings and shutdowns. Next, $130 billion for K-12 schools to help reach Biden's goal of having a majority of the nation's K-8 schools reopen safely within his first 100 days. Next, $35 billion to public colleges and universities to cover pandemic-related expenses and to steer funding to students as emergency grants. Next, $15 billion grants to over $1 million small businesses that have been hit hard by the pandemic, as well as other assistance. Next, some aspects of Biden's plan should receive more scrutiny than others, which include $350 billion in emergency funding for the state and local governments and several long-term Democratic policy aims, such as increasing the minimum wage to $15 an hour, expanding paid leave for workers, and increasing tax credits for families with children. Lawmakers also should be mindful of the overall cost of the relief bill, which would be paid for with borrowed money, adding to trillions in the debt the government has already incurred to confront the pandemic. We have long expressed concerns about increasing the mounting federal deficit and debt. But instead of fueling more partisan discord, Biden's proposed package should be viewed as a blueprint for rebuilding, not a misguided executive order. Republicans and Democrats should veer away from personality debates and engage in meaningful discussions. To make that happen, Congress has to change its course. This is an opportunity to, quote, reach across the aisle, as they like to say, and do more than stoke the flames of divisiveness. And January 20th could be a day of change for everyone. Focusing on solutions, not problems, we can begin the healing everyone needs. 4 years ago, President Trump got an opportunity to lay out his plan for the country. Wednesday, Biden will get to do the same. Obviously, there will be bumps in the road, moments of disagreement, and challenges, but we, as a nation, need to listen and hear what he has to say. He comes with decades of experience. He has the ability to heal. Now we just need to give him a chance. Good luck, President Biden. Let us now turn to the sports section. First, for a local columnist, local sports writer says, quote, a farewell to the Journal. From Justin Rust. It was just more than 2 years ago, 25 months to be exact, as colleague Brett Hayworth pointed out, when I started as the Sioux City Journal sports editor, following in the great Jeff Budlong's and many other famous names' shoes. For once, I was back home for the first time in a long time, basically since moving to Pine Bluff, Arkansas, almost a decade ago. Since that move, I was always at least 4 hours from home. But with the job at the Sioux City Journal, my hometown and high school were in my coverage area for the first time in my career. But after 25 short months, Saturday is my final day at the Sioux City Journal, since Monday will be my first day at the Northwest Iowa Review as a managing editor. It's kind of the same situation. I slid into the position here in Sioux City that was held by a good friend, Jeff Budlong, and in Sheldon, I will be sliding into a position that was previously held by another good friend, that'd be Ty Rushing. Of course, it wasn't an easy choice by any means. I will be transitioning mostly out of the sports side and focusing on news and features, something I haven't done for more than a decade. But luckily, I have had many reach out and tell me I am ready for this step in my career. Is it a bit scary? Yes. I know sports. I will always follow sports and be knowledgeable about sports. But this felt right, and it was an opportunity I couldn't pass up. Hey, I will actually figure out what 9 a.m. looks like consistently. While I look to the future, I will always remember my time in Sioux City fondly, especially since it brought me back home. Now, I know everyone doesn't go through this phase, especially in Northwest Iowa, but when I was in high school, I couldn't wait to get out and see the country, maybe work on one of the coasts, get away from Northwest Iowa. I had my fun. I went to Yankton, South Dakota, to Mitchell, South Dakota, to Pine Bluff, Arkansas, to back to Iowa and Waverly, then to Muscatine, and then to Mattoon, Illinois. But when I was in Illinois, after about a year, I was thinking about coming back home and looking for jobs here when the Sioux City Journal job came home. It's been great being back home in Northwest Iowa, and sometimes it takes being away from home to appreciate how great home is. It's like my mom basically wrote that line there. I will admit, it's also been a tough run the last 2 years. When I got here, I was excited to work with Barry Poe and Jerry Geese, two stalwarts of the Journal. A little more than 2 months into my run as the sports editor, Barry and Jerry were both offered buyouts, and by the end of March 2019, I was on my own, even though Barry has stayed on as a part-time writer, and Jerry is now just a text away. That is quite the wealth of knowledge that left, though, but at least Steve Schmidt is still around to take scores. He's been in that part-time position for a long time and does a great job. Luckily, I was able to bring in Zach James, who will be the new sports editor of the Journal starting on Sunday. About a week ago, Zach thanked me for taking a chance on him. I didn't take much of a chance. I knew his work in Clinton and all he could do, since I knew he would slide in perfectly here and do a great job as sports editor here. Even with Zach and me, it was quite the task. There were only two full-time writers for the Journal coverage area. To put it in perspective, we have more states to cover, three, than full-time staffers, so there was plenty to keep us busy. A lot of long days, but we always tried to get as much local in as we could. One of my proudest moments at the Journal was being awarded first place for the best sports sections by the National Newspaper Association this past year. A lot of work went into that award, and the amount of local stories that ran was the selling point. There have been other situations to navigate. Deadlines have moved up to the point where it is hard to get games from the night in, but coaches and athletic directors have been understanding. That's another thing I will miss, all the relationships with the coaches and athletic directors, along with seeing some special athletes. I've been fortunate to see Hunter Deckers and Cooper DeJean play multiple times. I got to cover one of the craziest state semifinals in Iowa history with Remsen St. Mary's football and Montezuma. I even got to see a night where 10 wrestlers from Northwest Iowa all competed for state titles 2 seasons ago. I love wrestling, and telling some of the wrestling coaches I am leaving with the hardest was the hardest. I teared up a little when I left the Long Lines Family Rec Center on Tuesday, knowing I didn't know when I will be covering a high-level wrestling event like I did Tuesday between West Sioux and Woodbury Central. There were a lot more highs than there were lows. Being in this position is hard, like most jobs. The hours are grueling and there's not much of a social life, even though Brett Hayworth, who I am really going to miss sitting next to, allowed me to join his trivia team. I wouldn't have traded any of it over the past 2 years. I had a blast being the sports editor of the Sioux City Journal, and thank you, Bruce Miller, for having me in this position. But now I will be spreading my wings in news. When I was a member of the Volant, it was Liz Gibbert who assigned me my first news story. She thought it would be good for me to expand, and I did 2 or 3 news stories for her. My first assignment was a debate between the USD College Republicans and USD College Democrats. Liz, who is still a close friend, liked my work and offered me advice on what I could do better. Others have followed with offering me advice from a news perspective, such as the staff from the Yankton PND, IC Muriel from Pine Bluff, Penny Weaver from Mattoon, and most recently Ty Rushing, who gave me the confidence to step into his old position at the Review. I will still see some of you around. It'll be a new journey and a new challenge. I will always be a sports guy at heart, and thank you to Sioux City and the area for allowing me to tell your sports stories over the past 2 years. So that's from the Sioux City sports editor who is leaving his role. Next, let's turn to the business section, page B7 of today's Sunday paper. Headline, Tyson prepares for vaccinations. Subheadline: Meatpacker to deploy mobile clinics at each U.S. plant. From Dakota City. Starting early this year, Tyson Foods, Inc. will partner with Matrix Medical Network to provide COVID-19 vaccine access and education to all of its U.S. employees. Tyson, the largest employer in Metro Sioux City, will deploy mobile health clinic staff with clinical staff to each of its U.S. facilities throughout the rest of this year. Matrix Medical Network runs mobile medical clinics and focuses on at-risk populations. Its network consists of more than 3,000 clinicians and professionals. At these mobile clinics, Tyson Foods employees can receive information regarding COVID-19 vaccines and distribution in their area. Employees can also receive education and counseling at these clinics, translated into multiple languages to accommodate employees. According to a news release, Tyson will be, quote, strongly encouraging its employees to get the vaccination and will work to ensure anyone who wants the vaccine can get one. Quote, providing vaccine education and accessibility is a critical part of our ongoing commitment to put the health and safety of our team members first, Tyson Foods President and CEO Dean Banks said in a news release. Although the vaccine's availability will vary depending on resources in each state, Banks said the mobile clinics will administer vaccines as soon as they have received guidance from state health officials and have sufficient quantities of the vaccine. Quote, Tyson and Matrix have worked together throughout the pandemic to create clinically driven strategies to mitigate the risk of the virus in the workplace, Matrix Chief Medical Officer Dr. Daniel Castillo said. Following the vaccination of frontline healthcare providers and staff and residents of nursing homes, meatpacking workers are among the next group of workers in line for the vaccines in Iowa, Nebraska, and other states. Thousands of workers at Tyson plants and other meatpacking plants have contracted COVID-19 in factories where employees work closely together on processing lines. Tyson's flagship beef plant in Dakota City, Nebraska, just across the border from Sioux City, shut down in early May after hundreds of its 4,500 workers tested positive for the virus. Tyson temporarily idled several other plants, including pork facilities in Storm Lake, Columbus Junction, and Perry, Iowa, and Madison, Nebraska, after hundreds of workers were infected. In late July, the meatpacker launched weekly coronavirus testing of workers across all of its 140 facilities. Tyson Foods has invested more than $540 million into providing its U.S. facilities with new safety and protective health measures during the pandemic. These measures have included temperature scanners, workplace dividers, additional team member pay and benefits, and expanded health services staff and on-site testing. Tyson now has 600 healthcare staff members, 200 of those are nurses, and administration staff hired in 2020. Beyond the pandemic, many of these new health measures are expected to remain in place long-term, company officials said. Now, with our time remaining together, let's switch over to the more lighthearted stuff for more human interest of the Dear Abby and the horoscopes. Looking to Dear Abby's column, headline, Husband Throws a Wrench in Wife's Exercise Plans. Dear Abby, As a way to manage my anxiety and stress as when COVID-19 hit, I started to exercise. Neither my husband, Chris, nor I had ever been into fitness at all. As the months have been going on, I have realized the power of being healthy, and I try to exercise every day. The problem is, Chris is, quote, angry. He calls it, quote, me time and has made it very difficult for me to go. I tried swimming in the morning before work, but he said he couldn't manage at home to get our 2-year-old ready for school. I tried to go to the gym in the early evening, but he said he needs me to help get the children ready for bed. I tried running later at night, but it didn't feel safe, and I also had trouble falling asleep. Abby, I don't know what to do. Last night he told me I am selfish and should move out. Can you help me? Signed, Keeping My Sanity. Abby writes, Dear Keeping, establishing a routine of regular exercise wasn't selfish. It was the right thing to do. People have been experiencing symptoms of depression and extreme stress since this pandemic began. It's more important than now than ever that you continue to take care of your physical and emotional health, and it's a shame your husband didn't do the same. Rather than prevent you from doing what you have been doing, your husband should have praised you. Could he be jealous or threatened by what you have accomplished? That he would say something so extreme as, quote, you should move out was childish. Parentheses, who would look after the kids then? A mature approach would be for the two of you to agree upon a schedule in which he either dresses the kids in the morning or tucks them in at night. It not only would be a lot less expensive than a divorce, but your husband might even grow to enjoy it. Dear Abby, I'm a divorced father of two, both over 18. I have been dating a divorced mother of three. Her children are between the ages of 7 and 12. We are really good together and we would like to make a life together. The problem is she's reluctant to let her ex-husband know about me for fear of his violent reaction. She has no lingering feelings towards him other than fear. Because of this, she doesn't want her kids to know we are romantically involved. They think I'm, quote, just a friend. She gets defensive when I bring this up. We have been seeing each other for a couple of years now. I love her, but I'm starting to get the feeling that this will never move forward. What should I do? And how long should I wait? Signed, Tentative in California. Dear Tentative, I wish you had written sooner. It appears that although the woman you're involved with is divorced, she is far from free. If she is afraid her ex will become violent, if she makes a relationship with you official, and he has acted violently towards her in the past, she should contact her local police department and report it. She may also want to consider a restraining order and or supervised visitation when she sees the children. If she is unwilling to free herself, then for your own sake, end the relationship because it will never progress. Dear Abby, what the heck happens to men between the ages of 45 and 60? It seems that all the women they're after are all 15 to 20 years younger. I don't mean just for sex, but for dating, love, and marriage. 2. We middle-aged women are often overlooked because these middle-aged guys don't realize we are at our sexual peak and often hot as hell. And we're active in many interesting, fulfilling activities. By the time these men come to their senses, they are usually washed up and impotent. Why is nature and society so cruel and unfair? How can I, as a sexy, active, middle-aged woman, beat the odds? I do not intend to remain celibate and alone for the rest of my life. Signed, Still Fun in the South. Dear Still Fun, you can't change other people, but you can change the way you react to them. A way to, quote, beat the odds would be to stop focusing solely on middle-aged guys and consider dating men a bit younger who appreciate what you have to offer. Even if it doesn't lead to marriage, you could have a lot of fun in the meantime. Next letter. Dear Abby, we have a friend who often comes to us for advice, but never seems to take it. She keeps making the same mistake over and over again. How do we get through to her? Signed, Friends Who Care in Utah. Abby writes, Dear friends, candidly, realize you can't get through to her because she's not really seeking advice. Rather than listening, she's venting. Because of the friendship, we'll listen when she dumps, but refrain from offering wisdom you know will be disregarded. Next, dear readers. Today we remember the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., who was martyred in the cause of civil rights in 1968. His words ring as true today as when he first uttered them. Quote, we must accept finite disappointment, but we must never lose infinite hope. His was a voice of reason in a time of insanity, silenced too soon. Signed, Abby. All right. Let's do the horoscopes. Monday, January 18th, 2021. Stabilize your life. Evaluate what you have, what you need, and what you can discard. Take a deep breath, look in the mirror, and justify every step you take. A change of heart will lead to a new beginning. It's time to prioritize and streamline. Capricorn. Take pride in what you do. Question every move and make and pursue things that make you feel good. Adjust when necessary and find new ways to work with what you already have. Review, recycle, and renew. Aquarius, observe what's going on around you and you will recognize what you can help or hinder your road to success. Your experience will encourage you to keep things close to the vest and rely on surprise. Pisces, ask for expert advice before making a move and it will clear up uncertainty. You'll accomplish more if you keep up with what's trending. A financial gain is foreseeable. Aries, channel your energy into helping others. An emotional encounter handled with patience will encourage a better relationship with someone dear to you. Take your time and evaluate your options. Taurus, spend more time getting ready and less time fretting over what might go wrong. Use your imagination to develop a solid plan. Don't let someone's uncertainty hold you back. Gemini, align yourself with informative individuals and share data that will bring you closer to a decision. Knowledge will be key when it comes to reaching your goals and achieving your dreams. Cancer, keep your emotions out of professional matters. Avoid joint ventures and shared expenses. Put your money and possessions in a safe place and protect yourself from manipulation. Leo, discuss your plans with someone close to you. The feedback you receive will lead to an unexpected opportunity. Don't make a premature decision. Time is on your side. Virgo, you may desire change, but before you engage in something new, look at the potential consequences. Focus on self-improvement, health, and personal growth before you venture down an unfamiliar path. Libra, uncertainty will lead you in different directions. Observe what's going on around you. Emotions will mount if you let someone dictate what you can do. Do your research. Scorpio, consider the best way to get what you want. A change, if implemented correctly, can give you the nudge you need to head in the right direction. Get your finances in order. Finally, Sagittarius. Make adjustments that will add to your comfort and security. Peace of mind will follow correct actions. Take control of your life and happiness. All right, let's do a quick recap of the weather and we'll close out our time together. Today, again, we're looking at intervals of clouds and sunshine, high of 34, winds about 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, it'll be mostly cloudy with a low of 23. Monday, it'll be cloudy with a couple of flurries, high of 35, low of 23. Tuesday, there'll be a high of 37, 22 degrees is the low, low clouds. Wednesday, warming up, mostly sunny, 44 is a high, 27 degrees is the low. Thursday, mostly sunny, high of 39, and a low of 18 degrees. Well, that ends our time for today for Iris for Sunday, January 17th, 2021. I hope you all have a wonderful week. Take care of yourselves and others. Until next time, bye-bye.